Hello, and welcome to the Germ to Jar Cannabis Cultivation Podcast, the show where we talk about everything related to cannabis cultivation and help to cultivate cultivators. I'm your host, AJ Tobian, and this is episode 3. I'm a little late in releasing this episode, and aside from some personal scheduling challenges, I'd like to share some of what I'm learning in producing this show. My goal whenever I share info through any platform is to be factual and comprehensive. Now, comprehensive to me means covering all situations and all options. I've come to the conclusion that there's an exhaustive amount of scenarios, situations, and variables in cannabis cultivation, making it virtually impossible to be as comprehensive as I'd like to be while still keeping to schedule and being somewhat entertaining. So all the information going forward in this podcast will still be current, scientifically backed, and factual, but it just might not cover all situations or options. That's not to say that I won't or can't address specific situations or exceptions to the norm. I'll just have to do it based on listener questions or feedback sent to me or the show. So please don't hesitate to reach out, and the best way to do that is by email to questions, that's questions with an S, at germtojarpodcast.com. So now it's time for a garden update. This is being recorded on February 22nd, 2020. Since the last episode, I was out of town for 4 days, and that proved to be the ideal time to rig up the automatic irrigation system for my Mars Hydro 2x4 tent. I did this using 3/4-inch PVC and 2 FloraFlex quick disconnect pipe systems that I'd been sitting on for a while. Each of them, these systems has an 8-outlet manifold, which is perfect for the 16 solo cup Pheno Hunt grow that I was running here under a Mars Hydro SP250 LED grow light. I can control water flow through the FloraFlex pipe systems via a lever that can regulate flow to the manifold, and in the manifold, I can install one of 4 different inserts that can regulate the water flow anywhere from 2 to 20 gallons per hour. Because of that ability, and because I wanted to make sure that I had more than enough water pressure in the 3/4-inch PVC, I used a 595 gallon per hour water pump in a 40 liter res to get water to the manifold. So water flows from the manifold via 1/4-inch spaghetti tubing and drip stakes driven into the dirt. Because I didn't have time to put the system through an adequate number of test runs before I left, I triggered the irrigation remotely via a Wi-Fi outlet myself. I purposely ran shorter cycles of 20 seconds to avoid overwatering and potential flooding in case the system wasn't dialed in just right. It was far easier to accept slight underwatering situations daily than to be overwatering and not know it. So at least if they were getting a little underwatered, they were still sure to get an irrigation cycle every day. Turns out the timing I used was pretty much spot on. If anything, as it gets run further into flower, I may dial back that 20-second irrigation cycle to 15 seconds and run it twice a day during the lights-on period. Only time will tell. As of this recording, the plants were topped 10 days ago, recovered from that, and the photoperiod light cycle has been flipped to 12-12, and that was 2 days ago. For those that count weeks in flower, as I do, I count the first week after the flip as a transition week and not a week in flower. I've also done a light lollipopping of these plants and will do a final one at the end of week 3 or 4 of flower, which is when most cultivars will have finished their stretch in flower. In addition to that, I took 37 cuts from the final topping of these plants, which will likely be my GR15, which is Grow Run 15. And the original set of tops that I took from this Pheno Hunt run were rooted and finally transplanted into their air pots and will be kept till I know which ones will be kept as mother plants based on which keeper phenos I find from this pheno hunt. The initial cuts from the pheno hunt of the black Dosi fire are also finally in the veg tent. They were topped 2 days ago. Lastly, GR14 is now on day 38 of flower and developing nicely. So as always, go ahead and check out my YouTube channel, CanCanGrow, CanCanGrow, for the video journals of all my grow runs. Next up, let's jump into some listener questions. I want to follow up on one of the questions from last episode and give some worthwhile advice for new growers when it comes to setting up a first-time or new grow. This is advice that will help them determine which equipment they need to purchase and not what they think they need from stuff they've read or advice they've been given. This isn't in-depth, but more like rapid-fire points to help get you started. If you feel any of these points are too brief, don't fret. Rest assured that I'll likely do a deep dive into each of these points in the future. But for cultivators who need a little high-level guidance right now, this will hopefully get you started moving in the right direction. First, you'll need to pick a place to set up your grow. You'll likely use a grow tent, but you may also build out your grow room. I personally recommend grow tents for new growers because it satisfies a lot of the ideal setup requirements. They come in various sizes and dimensions to fit almost any space. They have ideal footprints suited for almost all the current light fixtures. They have reflective walls, bars to hang equipment from the correct locations, vents, proper cutouts. They allow you the ability for light deprivation. They have good moisture retention and accessibility. Next, you'll want to purchase the highest quality light you can fit into your budget that will cover the footprint or canopy you'll be growing and specifically be flowering under. And as we talked about in the last episode, light intensity is more important than spectrum. You'll need adjustable rope hangers because you will need to be able to raise and lower your grow light, even if you have the ability to dim it. I recommend hygrometers to measure heat and humidity. Once you have those things, I recommend that you run your broom for a few days. Do these test runs so you know what your specific environment is and ultimately what you'll need for your specific setup. You need to be strategic about what you buy and put in your grow. Most of us are on the budget and at the very least are probably growing our own so we can save money on getting our medicine. Knowing the heat and humidity your grow produces will tell you what areas of your environment you need to focus on and ultimately what equipment you may need or not need. Last point I'll flag for now will be available power. Make sure you have enough power or electricity running to your grow area to power it. In Canada here, we run 120 volts. Clearly that might be different in your area. And the average breaker is 15 amps. Breakers will only generally let you run at 80% max capacity for a short period of time before tripping. So you need to be below that to run for an extended period of time. For example, for a full 12-hour light cycle. I would recommend aiming for 70% of max. On a 15-amp breaker, that's 10.5 amps you have to work with. Now, watts are watts no matter what the voltage is where you're located. So to calculate the number of amps you're running, take the number of watts and divide that by the volts. So for example, I have a 630 watt ceramic metal halide light fixture. Divide that by 120 volts and it's using approximately 5.25 amps. That leaves me approximately 5.25 amps left to safely use. Now, most other equipment will use less than one amp, but those amps do add up. If you're running an inline exhaust fan, a couple of oscillating fans, and maybe even an intake fan, you're fine because you're only adding maybe two or so amps of load. Let's say, though, that you find you need to run a dehumidifier. Well, that's a high power draw, and all of a sudden, that may put you over that 70 or worse, 80% of that 15 amp load, which means you'll constantly be tripping your breaker. Or you may decide you want to use supplemental lighting. You may choose to run a hydroponic system, which has pumps, bubblers, etc. Now, what if your grow is in your closet or in the room where there are other things that need power in that room? A different outlet that's on the same breaker is not going to be an option. You need outlets on different breakers. So the point is, make sure you also take the time to plan what your power usage will be, because that could end up being a significant hurdle if you're not careful. This following question was sent to the show on Instagram by @jolly_greens on Instagram. And it goes, congratulations and great job on your new podcast. I will be turning in to soak all the information that you provide. I'm currently looking for a budget LED grow to start my first grow. If you have any suggestions, please let me know. Again, great job on the podcast. First off, Jolly_Greens, your kudos and kind words mean so much to me and definitely inspires me to produce more content. So thank you for that, your support, and for tuning in. There are so many grow lights on the market now in all price ranges that it makes it virtually impossible to effectively present all available options, or even a decent recommendation, to be honest. My Grow Light Info Series hopefully will equip people with the basic know-how on how to interpret the numbers, do informed comparisons, and narrow down which grow lights fit their setup and should be at the top of their list for consideration. Now, because I know that telling you to just keep listening to my show doesn't help you this second, although I'm certain it will in the future, I will provide a budget grow light recommendation. I feel that Mars Hydro has stepped up their game in the quality and performance of their grow light significantly from previous models. You really could not go wrong with purchasing any of their SP, TS, or TSL series of LED grow lights. The only real deciding factor for you between these models is to choose the one that covers the footprint of your canopy. For instance, the SP250 or TSL2000 both cover a 2x4 flowering space, whereas the TS1000 covers a square 2x2 area for flower. Full disclosure, Mars Hydro has provided me with equipment to test and review for them, so I have a little more intimate knowledge of their offerings, which is why I can confidently get that recommendation. That is not to say that there are not other budget LEDs from different manufacturers that are not up to the task. To the contrary, as I've already mentioned, there are more than I could realistically mention here. So really, the true winner is the consumer, but I will caution that there are still companies out there peddling products that are not advisable at any price point. Bottom line, because I have firsthand experience with their newest line of products, I can confidently recommend Mars Hydro LEDs in the budget category to you, and should I get the opportunity to test other brands, budget or otherwise, I will definitely share my findings, recommendations, or possible buyer beware warnings on this show. Now that we've already gotten on the topic of grow lights, let's jump into the last segment of today's show, which is a continuation on indoor grow lighting info I began talking about last episode. This show, we're going to discuss grow light efficacy or photosynthetic photon efficacy. PPE, which is more simply referred to as efficacy, is the par photon output of a light source or fixture measured in micromoles per joule, and basically shows how effective a light fixture is at converting electricity into light. Physics, more specifically Einstein, says energy cannot be created or destroyed. It can only be changed from one form to another. So in light fixtures, input power is output as either light or heat, unless there are other moving parts, which makes it a much less efficient light. This is why fixtures using fans to cool them are becoming less and less popular, because they end up using valuable energy on fans and not outputting light. The vast differences in grow light efficacy is why watts is no longer an effective way to compare grow lights. It was sufficient before because similar lights use mostly the same technology, for example, in incandescent, fluorescent, metal halide, high-pressure sodium, or even ceramic metal halide, but you can't use it to compare different technologies. And further to that, this is where LEDs have completely thrown this on its head. The higher the efficacy, the more light output per watt. So lower efficacy means it will take more power and proportionately more money to run that light, while a light with a higher efficacy number can produce the same amount of light at less power draw, which translates into less cost to run. Or with that higher efficacy rating, for the same power draw as the less efficient light and operating cost, you could run a more powerful light. It's worth mentioning here that we are talking about true wattage and not equivalent wattage, and definitely not LED wattage. These different wattage numbers really only apply to LEDs because all other types of lights state the true wattage needed to run them. So let me explain. True wattage is the actual amount of power drawn at the wall or electrical outlet. So that's pretty straightforward. Equivalent wattage is a comparison wattage that factors in the efficacy we spoke about. So let's take, for instance, a 1,000 watt single-ended HPS, which generally has an efficacy number of 1.4 micromoles per joule. So that fixture would be a TPF, or total light output, of 1,400 micromoles per second. An LED with an efficacy rating of 2.2 micromoles per joule and pulling a true 600 watts at the wall would have a PPF, or total light output, of 1,320 micromoles per second. So you can see that for almost half the power draw, you're getting nearly the same total light output. The marketing now for that LED light fixture may now state that the LED in this example is a 1,000 watt equivalent or replacement. Next, the LED wattage, in my opinion, is potentially and unfortunately usually utilized as a much more deceiving metric. LED wattage is the maximum wattage a diode or all diodes combined can theoretically run at, or what their full capacity is. As I alluded to above, it's a way that some disingenuous LED light manufacturers mislead potential buyers. Like, let me explain how this is. LEDs have a max wattage, but they cannot be run at that capacity because their lifespan would be significantly reduced and they would burn out in a very short period of time. So LEDs are run at much less wattage, usually between 30 to 50% of their max capacity. For example, if an LED diode could run at a max wattage of 10 watts, it will usually be run at 3 to 5 watts to prolong the diode life. Where this gets misrepresented is that an LED company may promote that their light, which has 100 diodes capable of a max of 10 watts per diode, is marketed as a 1,000 watt light fixture when actually it's running the diodes at 30% of that max capacity, or 3 watts per diode, and therefore is actually 300 true watts. That is significantly less light being touted as a 1,000 watt fixture and replacement. They get away with it because theoretically the diodes and fixture is rated at a max of 1,000 watts, but really would never be run at that level. And in case you were wondering why LED diodes are not run at their max capacity, it's because if they were, they would produce way too much heat, and that heat would literally burn out the diodes. In the next episode, we'll cover the following things in this lighting info series: UV and far red, the spectrums outside of PAR, what we know so far about their effects to plant growth, and how PBAR may be a future metric used to better determine a grow light's efficacy and how it might be used to compare lights. We'll also talk about types of lights, pros and cons, which situations they might be useful, and their effectiveness at growing cannabis from germination to jarring. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Make sure you like and review the show on your favorite podcast directory. If you want more from the Germ to Jar Cannabis Cultivation Podcast, follow our other online properties. Twitter, we're at Germ to Jar PC. On Instagram, at Germ to Jar Podcast. On Facebook, the Germ to Jar Cannabis Cultivation Podcast. And finally, stay tuned for the upcoming launch of our website, www.germtojarpodcast.com. We definitely want to hear from you, though, so please reach out to us with questions, comments, thoughts on the broadcast, suggestions, or just to say hi. And you can do this by email, which is questions, and that's questions with an S, at germtojarpodcast.com. I'm your host, AJ Tobiam, and if you'd like to follow me, I am at CanCanGrow, that's CanCanGrow, on virtually all social media platforms, predominantly on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and Patreon. Thank you so much for tuning in, and until the next episode, keep growing that fire.